Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome to the Three Martini Lunch with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, I just couldn't wait. I had to start that first martini today because this one is particularly delicious. You know, we criticize the president for a lot of things, but apparently killing terrorists is something he's relatively good at. We saw it with Osama bin Laden, Anwar al-Awlaki, and, you know, I don't think U.S. was directly involved today with Muammar Gaddafi's death in Libya, but who cares? What a great day it is for those who have suffered in his country and for Americans who have been the victims of terrorism, who have lost loved ones, whether it was U.S. servicemen at the Berlin Disco back in the 80s, whether it was someone who had a loved one or a friend on Pan Am Flight 103, or any of these other countless incidents in which Gaddafi was involved with the heinous killing or maiming of innocent people. We know there's a lot of unanswered questions about what replaces him in Libya, but right now, for a kid who was 11 years old when I watched President Reagan announce the bombing of Libya in 1986, and just watching his heinous activities over the years, this is a good day.
It is, Greg. This is an update. At this hour, closely late morning of Thursday, Muammar Gaddafi is still dead, in honor of the Francisco Franco line. No, well, I mean, we kind of knew that when the regime fell, there was only a certain number of ways this was going to end. Either he'd disappear, you know, right off into the Sahara someday and never be found, get caught and end up at The Hague or something like that, and, you know, or this. And kind of glad that it, you know, went out, top of the world, ma! And, you know, we not terribly surprising, a little bit of confusion this morning about various reports. Sounds like he was shot while trying to escape in a convoy and died from those wounds. It's one of those things where it's nice. It's been a good year and actually a pretty good decade in terms of bad people meeting bad ends. And particularly, it's been a boom year, really, for killing bad people. The economy may not be booming, but when it comes to killing bad guys, we're actually doing pretty good. The nice signal that it sends to almost every other dictator around the globe is this can happen to you. And your regime is never as secure as you think it is. Your hold on power is never as, you know, as it is. And there will be no busty Ukrainian nurse with you in the spider hole when they pull you out there. The Amazon guard or whatever, all this stuff, all these trappings of power and the cult of personality that surround Gaddafi weren't there at the end. And he died probably a pretty miserable death. And good martini, you know?
Yeah.
Picturing him bleeding out there on the sand. That's, you know, warm, fuzzy feeling, you know. Now, a question is, now, what do they do with them? Is it burial at sea, et cetera, et cetera? My proposal, I put on Twitter earlier, I want to see his Gaddafi's body put onto a plane, fly it by remote control, then blow it up over Scotland. Kind of poetic justice there. Let him experience that. So he'd be dead, but, you know, at least we could treat his body with the respect that it deserves, which is none. So
that would be coming full circle. Another good way to observe it would be to immediately arrest Megrahi, who's somehow magically still alive after 2 years, but that's a topic for another day. But for Americans for over four decades, and really people in a lot of different countries around the world, a great martini to start the day with. That's the kind of news you want to wake up to. On to martini number two now, and for all the kudos we just gave the president for his ability to wipe out terrorists, it's back to the usual fodder when it comes to the president's handling of, oh, just about everything else, including his foreign policy. But the president, apparently, while very willing to apologize for things America has done before he took office, apparently not doing a whole lot of introspection. He's been on this bus tour the last couple days, and somewhere along the way, he managed to find some time to chat with ABC's Jake Tapper in some school classroom. And Jake Tapper said, look, you know, the economy's not very good. Yes, you won by a substantial amount in 2008, but a few million people who are tired of waiting for your policies to work could flip to the other side. There's a good chance you could lose. And Obama didn't dismiss that, but here's his explanation in response.
I guarantee it's going to be a close election because the fact is that the economy is not where it wants to be. And even though I believe that all the choices we've made have been the right ones, we're still going through difficult circumstances.
All of our decisions have been the right ones. Well, just last week, sir, you had to scrap a pivotal portion of your health care bill, which was part of the smoke and mirrors to explain to the American people why it was actually good for taxpayers. And now, of course, you have to point out that it's wrong. The stimulus was supposed to make sure the unemployment didn't get above 8%. We're still north of 9%. Regulations up the yin-yang. You got private employers having no idea what their certainty level is. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, Jim. For this guy to say he hasn't made any mistakes and has made all the right decisions doesn't exactly instill Americans with the best reasons to vote for him for another 4 years. If this is the best we could have done, I think I'll take option B.
You know, this is one of those bad martinis that is actually kind of good for us as Republicans. The more out of touch Obama is, the better it is for Republican chances in 2012. But it is kind of stunning to see Obama running around making this argument. Just this morning, Austin Goolsbee was on MSNBC, and he said, well, you know, looking back, we probably just shouldn't have done cash for clunkers the way we did. The housing market assistance hasn't worked out the way it has. I think I'd really love to say to Obama, you're absolutely certain you don't want to take Solyndra back. You're absolutely certain that Fast and Furious, you know, there's no decision you could have made that could have prevented that. Just thinking of this, you know, the fact that he came out and said, oh, by the way, you know, shovel ready wasn't really shovel ready. Didn't right. know that. You know, like Obama himself knows he's made wrong decisions. And by the way, this was a huge issue during the Bush years that Bush was never willing to admit that he made mistakes, that he right. shouldn't have, you know, he should have apologized for invading Iraq, yada, yada, yada. So Obama, like, the more Obama insists, no, what you are enjoying right now, this is as good as it gets. It is impossible for any president to do the job better than I have. Then I think the more likely most Americans are going to say, okay, it's not even that this guy is making the wrong decisions. It's that this guy can't even be honest with himself or with us that he's making the wrong decisions. And oh, by the way, I really do believe that it's the former. I don't think Obama, I think if you fed him up with sodium pentothal, Obama would say the exact same thing, that he doesn't really think he's made any significant mistakes in his presidency.
Oh, his ego is perfectly big enough to believe that with all sincerity. The problem, though, is that kind of brings him down to a Jimmy Carter level between the soft speech and basically saying, you know what, this is just where we are now. I don't know if we're ever going to be back to where we were, if we're ever going to be as great as we once were. That's the kind of positive, sunny American outlook that everyone loves to see in a president.
One other note in that comment, I believe he says something like, the economy is not where it wants to be.
Yes.
Like, so the economy is a persona. It thinks it's an artificial intelligence. It thinks for itself, and it wants to be in a particular place. And right now, it would seem to be the toilet is where it wants to be. But like, so we have to persuade it to go somewhere. And I don't know if assigning a collective a consciousness to the economy, you refer to it as it. You know, it's not that it's not deciding. It's not where we want it to be. But it didn't, you know, it's not, there's something weird about his phrasing there that kind of suggests that he now sees the economy. We've all joked that Obama's real opponent in 2012 is the economy. Well, it sounds like he might be getting ready to go after it and really run attack ads and really kind of, you know, show the American people that it's not he who has failed. It's the economy that's failed.
That's exactly right. They're not afraid to animate anything in the Democratic Party. Just last week, Jesse Jackson Jr. was talking about how the hour was demanding a massive new spending program. So the clock was talking to him, as you pointed out. Now the economy is personally getting in the way of Barack Obama's reelection campaign. Very interesting.
After making demands, the hour could not be reached for further comment.
Well, another thing that could potentially trip up the president's reelection bid is the number two man on the ticket. That's Vice President Joe Biden, who's probably been more famous for making gas than anything else so far in the administration. But that kind of goes along with the role of being vice president most of the time. But Joe Biden last week, you may have heard the clip where he was surrounded by police, fire, and teacher union members in Flint, Michigan, where he talked about how over the past few years, the number of law enforcement officials has gone down and the number of murders and rapes has gone up. Basically saying that if you don't pass the jobs bill, you're in favor or you're at least going to allow more murders and rapes in cities across America. Well, he did it again in Philadelphia, saying that these aren't just temporary jobs. It's not temporary to a woman calling 911, and the difference could be an extra police officer who could prevent a rape. So Jason Matera of Human Events caught up with the vice president in the hallway, and here's a little bit of that exchange.
Do you regret using a rape reference to describe Republican opposition to the president's bill?
No. What I said, let's get it straight, guys. Don't screw around with me. Let's get it straight.
You didn't use a rape reference?
No, let me listen to me.
I'm listening.
I said rape was up three times in Flint. They're the numbers. Go look at the numbers. Murder's up, rape is up, and burglary's up. That's exactly what I said.
And if the Republicans don't pass this bill, then rape will continue to rise.
Murder will continue to rise. Rape will continue to rise. All crimes will continue to rise.
So there you have it, Republicans. You're pro-murder, pro-rape, all crimes. You're in favor of them unless you vote for this picked-apart jobs bill.
You know, as Ala Pundit asked Greg, how many rapes and murders could have been stopped with the $550 million that were spent on Solyndra's loan? Why are Democrats supporting rape and murder and solar energy instead of preventing American people? I mean, one of the big problems in this is this ipso facto concept that you can stop crime by spending money. In relative terms, yeah, you know, a well-staffed and well-stocked police department can probably, you know, work at its best efficiency. But the idea that, you know, there's a one-to-one correlation, or the idea that that Biden can make the argument that, well, this bill is the difference between this crime being committed and this one not being committed. I'm not quite so less. In his original metaphor, I believe, he kind of depicted this scenario in which a woman calls 911 because she's being raped, and that because 911 had an extra cop, they got there faster. And I guess this rapist is just hanging around as his victim calls 911. Just a creepy metaphor, just something where politicians just should not go in this direction. It's kind of fascinating that Biden, you know, the RNC and various folks said, oh my God, how can you say this? And Biden, the administration, just doubled down. There's an interesting theory floated by Stephen Hayes last night, who argued that this is preparing the groundwork for an unbelievably negative campaign coming from the Democrats in 2012, that by the time Election Day rolls around, the Republican candidate will basically be accused of wanting to see women raped and people murdered, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, apparently.
They'd be considered objectively pro-murder to be a Republican. Alan Grayson will look like the nice guy by the time the Obama for America campaign is finished. So this is what's coming. You know, brace yourselves. And remember, this is hope and change and not red states, not blue states, red, white, and blue states, and all that other postpartisan jazz that all of us knew was nonsense from the beginning.
Mr. President, you sure you haven't made any mistakes? Maybe back August 2008?
Biden? Yeah,
yeah,
you know.
You want to kick that one around? So, yeah, just to review this week, Republicans or anyone else opposed to the jobs bill, which includes a lot of Democrats, as it turns out, you're pro-dirty air, pro-dirty water, pro-people without health insurance, pro-murder, pro-rape, pro-crime.
The message of 2012 from the Democrats will be, our party stands for all good things, their party stands for all bad things. Literally, this will be, you know, the fight between heaven and hell. And, you know, I, for one, am tired of people injecting religion and politics, Greg.
Jim, have a great day. Continue sipping that first martini if there's any left. Even get a refill. I'll see you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.